I don't think it's an instrument. I think it's an institution. It's as simple as that. It's almost a case of, as soon as you mention Van Dessel and the organ, there's some Faustian pact where you have to say, oh, and did you realise that it's widely recognised as one of the top three on the island of Ireland? Not the Republic of Ireland, no less, but the entire island of Ireland. And it's just one of those things that sort of, it's one of those badges of honour that people just want to sort of just to impress upon you that there is, we say, the importance of these things, and people are minded to experience things that they're not necessarily will experience on a day-to-day lives, and that it doesn't rate highly within their lives. But when you hear and see class, you know it.
Over time, I listened to it, I saw wonderful music being played in it, I played it myself a couple of times, and it's the equivalent of organist's heaven playing on that instrument. It is one of the finest instruments in the country. I have recorded a number of other instruments like it, but I have to say, nothing that sounds as sweet as this instrument does. It can fill the building with wonderful sound, and at the same time it can be delicate, it can be exciting. There are so many colours on it, and it suits music from very early music right up to contemporary modern music. Like, in terms of the great instruments of Ireland, it's up there in the top three. What's comparable with it, depending on your point of view, St Patrick's in Dublin. I think St Finbar's in Cork is a very big instrument, and there is this Danish instrument in Tullamore, which is a donation, and these are world-class instruments, you know. So it was interesting when a Belgian company actually recorded Dundalk some years ago, and the music that they picked was the music that the organ was built for.
Just the whole thing of that organ and the sound it made in St Patrick's, it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience just to be part of, and so many people did appreciate it, even though there wouldn't have been singers or particularly musical. People would sit on in the church just to listen to the sound of the organ. It was just such a magnificent sound, such a wonderful sound. And it's just wonderful that this program is being done, give people a little bit of insight into the wonderful instrument that we have, and give us all a better appreciation of it.
Dundalk, 1834. The present site for St Patrick's Cathedral was acquired by Father Matthew McCann, who was then succeeded as parish priest by Father John Coyne. During Father Coyne's time as parish priest, the new St Patrick's Cathedral was completed, having previously been situated in Chapel Street. The cost of the build was €25,000, and it took over 12 years. Completed in 1847, but in use from 1842, St Patrick's is built of Newry granite and designed in the style of King's College Chapel in Cambridge, London, while the interior is said to be modelled on Exeter Cathedral. The architect for the build was Thomas John Duff from Newry. His work included three churches dedicated to St Patrick. Along with St Patrick's Church in Dundalk, there was also the Cathedral Church of St Patrick and St Colman in Newry, and St Patrick's Cathedral in Armagh City. Almost 50 years after St Patrick's was completed, during the tenure of Father Bernard Donnellan, An order was placed with Willis and Co. in London in 1899 for the building of a new organ. The new organ was opened on the 1st of July 1900 at 1 p.m. with Mr. H.L. Balfour, the organist at the Royal Albert Hall in London, giving a recital of classical music. But it was over 6 months after this that the solemn opening and dedication of the organ took place in early 1901, with Cardinal Logue presiding. This documentary sets out to tell the history of that organ, made by one of the oldest and most famous organ building companies still active in the world today. An organ that is considered to be an instrument on par with the finest organs, not only on the island of Ireland, but across the United Kingdom and further afield. In doing so, we set out to tell the story of Louds' hidden musical gem.
Okay, so I'm Brendan McCord. I'm organist here in St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dundalk. And we're now in the porch and we're making our way to the gallery. I've been organist here in St. Patrick's for about 35 years. Shortly after Una, there were a few people came for short periods after Una. Una had been here 13 years after Mr. Vendetta's death. He died in 1974. So we're now on the organ gallery, organ loft. We're looking at our magnificent Willis organ. What you're looking at is it stretches right across the centre aisle. The whole centre nave is the full stretch of it. And you're looking at pipes running from right to left. They're actually what you call speaking pipes. Sometimes the front pipes on an organ will be ornamental. They're just standing there, part of the casing. But in this instance, all of those pipes are actually working. Each of them will have air going through them. And what you're looking at is some of them are pedal pipes and some are not. They're ranging in height, as you look at them, they're from 8 foot to about 19 foot tall. Now what you're looking at 50 odd pipes there. But if you look between the feet of them, maybe you can or can't see the stuff going on behind you there. Well, there's about 2,200 more pipes in there. Some of them are only about the size of, smaller than a big biro. And some of them are huge wooden pipes, square wooden pipes. They belong to the pedal department. It's all mechanical. The only electrical part in there is the light bulb for reading the music and the electric starter for the motor downstairs to drive the wind up. But everything in there is, there's nothing electrical in there. It's just working in this mechanical fashion for now 124 years. It's exactly as it was in 1900.
But how exactly does this pipe organ, which has taken pride of place in St. Patrick's Cathedral since 1900, actually work? Brian McIver, an audiovisual producer, broadcaster and trainer, who in 2009 made a documentary for Lyric FM about the life of Michael Van Dessel, who was a choirmaster, composer and organist in St. Patrick's for nearly 50 years, helps explain.
A pipe organ is basically a box of whistles, and it has whistles from some that are as few as a couple of inches long to pipes that are 16 foot in length. And the pipes that are 16 foot in length can generate the sort of sound that you would hear at a U2 concert, that low bass. So it has a range of sounds, from delicate flute-like sounds right through to brilliant trumpet sounds. And the type of organ that it is, it was conceived as a symphonic instrument. In other words, that it would emulate the symphony orchestra. And it's very versatile in its tone colours. So it's a bit like being a painter and opening a box of paints to realise that there are 104 colours in it. And this would have infinitely more colours acoustically. So it's an instrument that can accompany choirs, it can accompany singers, it can play great solos, it can play music of all styles, from very early music and make it sound absolutely wonderful and exciting, through modern works. You know, for the layperson, it's something that will make a building come alive. Say on Christmas Eve, if you're there singing carols and there's this wonderful pealing sound, that's what you get in Dundalk in spades. You know, it's suited to the building. It was designed for the building by an organ builder who came in, threw his cane down on the ground, listened to the reverberations and said, "This is what you're going to get." And boy, do they get value for their money.
The organ was built by Henry Willis and Sons Limited, who have been in operation since 1845 and have an Opus list of over 2,500 organs completed and installed up to the present day. With four Henry Willis at the helm of the company from 1845 until 1997, Henry Father Willis, Henry Willis II, Henry Willis III, and most recently, Henry Willis IV, before his retirement from the company in 97, the Willis organ in Dundalk is said to be one of the last true Father Willis organs. Speaking on an episode of Howard Goodall's Organ Works, broadcast on Channel 4 in 1997, Henry Willis IV, the last Henry Willis to be associated with the company, speaks about Father Willis and his memories of him and the company he set up.
But wealth and power in Imperial Britain also belonged to captains of industry, and these magnates wanted to bring the music of the masters to the masses. What they did was build huge neoclassical concert halls and in them imperial-sized organs. The builder they usually called upon was Father Willis.
Henry Willis IV still continues in his great-grandfather's organ-building tradition. He even shares his ancestors' Victorian work ethics.
Tell me a little bit about a big Victorian builder like Willis. I mean, was this a big operation? How many people will have worked there?
Now, there's an interesting point. All of them, as opposed to nowadays when almost none of them work.
Ah.
But there were 380 odd of them.
Really?
In the firm.
Do you know why Willis developed so well over the years? Because it really became such a premier builder, didn't they?
Yes. It developed partly because of his interest in music and music in the church, partly because he was extremely self-assured, as many Willises are reputed to be, and, of course, he wasn't hampered by the Briberies and Corruptions Act 1901, which gave a much freer hand to people who, in those days, were able to have patrons. He was wise enough to have patrons, indeed, sometimes more than one, unknown to each other. The normal technique was to get the church to pay for half the organ and each of the patrons to pay for half as well. This made some organ building quite profitable.
When they were making these huge town hall organs in the 19th century, there was a sort of feeling of trying to outdo each other, wasn't there? Sort of rivalry.
Certainly.
That was the town.
I want one bigger and better than the one you've just built down the road. Because I'm a richer mill owner.
There must have been more to it than that. There must have been something that really made people want this Willis sound rather than anybody else's.
Well, it was merely because the Willis sound was available in so many concert halls and town halls and city halls and the Royal Albert Hall and the Alexandra Palace and St. Paul's Cathedral, Canterbury Cathedral, Gloucester Cathedral, Hereford Cathedral, Exeter Cathedral, and so forth. And they wanted the best. And they were determined that the best was Willis. And Willis assured them that the best was Willis, and they purchased it.
At the turn of the 20th century, the church administration and congregation of St. Patrick's undoubtedly wanted the best for their beautiful building. And once they decided that the old organ was no longer fit for purpose, the only company to contact was Willis and Son.
When you go back to the building with this organ, there was a smaller organ here, built by Telford and Telford, a Dublin company, up until 1900. But it wasn't big enough for the congregations that St. Patrick's had at that time. So a bigger organ was needed. And a committee of Dundalk people got together and decided they would approach Willis Company in London. He was in London at the time, they're in Liverpool now. And at the time there were people who said, who do you think you are? Going away, you sure, what's wrong with, you know? But this Willis, Henry Willis, he was after building the Royal Albert Hall. He was after building St. Paul's. Those instruments, major instruments. I mean, he was the megastar at the time. He's called, you'll see it written here, Father Willis. That's not because he was a priest. He was the father of the group. There's Willis II, Willis III, so there are different Willis organs in the country built by the Willis Company, but they might have been by the son, the grandson, etc., etc. Sure.
Although Father Willis passed away in 1901, the year after the organ was officially opened by Mr. H.L. Balfour, the organist at the Royal Albert Hall in London, the connection between Willis & Son Limited and St. Patrick's continued until 1980. And for any who are lucky enough to visit the gallery where the organ console is situated, the connection to Father Willis is still extremely visible.
Okay, what we have here is a cloth covering over the keyboards, written under his Father Willis, 1901. For visitors, this, it wasn't here in 1901. It only came last year. My daughter got it made for me for my birthday. That's where that came from. You see, in the cold and damp weather like now, there'd be an awful lot of dampness around, and I wouldn't want any of it in the keys. So this is a simple cover to cover the keys. It's not to keep them warm or anything, but just to keep any dampness off them.
The correspondence on file at Willis & Sons Limited, who are currently situated in Liverpool, goes right back to the installation of the organ. It mentions mostly items to do with servicing and cleaning of the organ up until the mid-1900s, when further work was undertaken in 1946, which consisted of a clean and overhaul of the instrument. Some 204 leather motors, which are small bellows-like mechanisms, were removed and returned to the UK for repair. But unfortunately, the operation was not without problems, as Her Majesty's Customs and Excise stepped in to hinder the transport of the motors back to Dundalk. There's quite a lot of correspondence from the necessary authorities to Henry Willis & Son, which concerns the necessary paperwork to ensure the release of the material to allow the organ to be fixed. In a 1961 episode of a Munster journal, available on the RTE archives, Harry Ireson, an organ builder from Willis & Sons, explains the techniques involved in restoring the 100-year-old organ in St. John's Cathedral in Limerick. Interestingly, the musical director who performed on the night of the reopening in Limerick in 1961 was none other than musical director Michael Van Dessel, who held the role of choir master and organist in St. Patrick's for approximately 50 years.
Well, now, this organ that you've been working on, would you like to describe what type of organ is it?
Well, it was a mechanical action, a three-manual organ built by Dr. Hill, a very famous organ builder of the last century, who was a contemporary of our firm's grandfather, Father Willis. They were contemporaries and two of the finest organ builders in the world. And we took the organ down and found that it was beautifully built. It was a really fine organ. And we've modernised it. We've put it in a modern tonal scheme. We've entirely changed the tonal balance of the organ. But all the pipes were used, just odd ones were changed, but generally speaking, I think it's 2,500 odd pipes are basically the same as has been for 80 years.
Is the organ builder's craft a highly scientific and detailed one?
Well, it's a craft. It's divided into sections. There is metalwork for the making of metal pipes, woodwork with all the various component parts. There's the electrical side, and there's the tonal side and the servicing side. So between these, you have practically five crafts in one trade, as it were.
Michael Van Dessel, was the first in a group of Belgian musicians who were encouraged during the early to mid 20th century by Irish archbishops to come to Ireland to revitalize, lead, and perform sacred music in the country's Catholic churches and cathedrals. Arriving in 1923 and originally planning to stay only 1 year, he stayed in the Dundalk region for over 50 years and was recognised as a sacred music authority not only in Dundalk, but all across the country. Such was the high esteem in which Michael was held. The County Museum decided to hold an exhibition a number of years ago in his honour.
My name is Brian Walsh, I'm the curator here at the County Museum Dundalk. And in 2011, we had an exhibition we basically dedicated to the memory and the achievement and legacy of Michael Van Dassel. I suppose we say, like, I was quickly made aware of Michael Van Dassel's contribution to music and society in Dundalk shortly after my arrival, just through the conversations that you'd have with members of staff. We had two members, male members of staff, who were choristers, and basically they learned how to sing through Michael's auspices and offices. And it was one of those things that they always spoke so highly of him. It was sort of like that hushed tones and that. And they always spoke of his of Michael's belief that everybody can sing. It's just to find a way that that person can liberate their voice. And it was just, so that's sort of just in conversation when we're talking about, oh, when we were in school and what we did at school, and so getting involved in the school choir and that type of thing. And then somewhere along the line, I was basically, because we have sort of a very open philosophy in relation to what we're trying to do in the museum, to promote a knowledge and appreciation and an acknowledgement of the past, that the opportunity to do something on Michael came by. The amazing thing about it is, from time to time, is that we would have had a number of photographs in the collection, black and white photographs. We said there are two that come to mind, and it's Michael playing the organ, I think just in the preparation for a Christmas.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Concert, and you've got this choir of I think it's boys in the mainstream gathered around. It's almost like forming a semicircular, and it's like it's a big almost scrum without the violence, as it were, that people are just peering in and just they're so engrossed in what they're doing. And so that was the first thing. It's just, as images go, it's particularly strong, because you just project your own feelings and thoughts on it. And the second one is just what actually became the promotional poster for the museum, and that was Michael sitting at the organ. And it wasn't a man sitting at the organ, it was a man sitting comfortably at his workplace. And it's just the way that there's a softness in the body language, a softness in the eyes, and you can just sort of feel the warmth coming from this man, who basically, as we know, almost shouldn't have been here because of the way that he actually ended up being sent to Ireland. So it's like, for was supposed to be, what, a year or thereabouts, ended up being a lifetime and a huge contribution in that time. And I think that we say that legacy still exists between the organ, and even not only just the organ here in Dundalk, but he was involved in the purchase of the organ in the cathedral in Galway. And obviously I would think that one of the more important things was, and it goes back to this, everybody can sing, the desire to share his expertise with other people.
At the launch of the exhibition about Michael Van Dassel in 2011, Baron Georges Minet, who was also an organist and choir master at St Patrick's Cathedral in Armagh from 1959 until his retirement in 2005, and was the last of the select group of Belgian and German musicians who were encouraged to come to Ireland to revitalise music in the country's Catholic churches and cathedrals, spoke about his friendship with Michael.
First of all, it's an honour to give this short introduction. Indeed, it was a privilege to have Michael van Dessel as my best friend. Apart from our mother tongue, which was Flemish, which you often call Dutch, we had so many other things in common. We both chose to make a career in this beautiful country. We also had two great loves in our lives, our family and our music. Where we differ is the reason why we left our little Belgium. Michael came here in the early 20s after the First World War, when Belgium was completely ruined. Even the churches could not afford a professional organist. However, even when times were difficult in Ireland, the people were always exceptionally generous for their priests, for their church. And consequently, the church was able to pay for a professional organist. In the 20s, the biggest and the best organ in all Ireland was to be found here in Dundalk, in St. Patrick's. We have today a Dundalk man who still plays that organ. For that reason, the clergy wanted to employ the best organist they could find. And that musician was naturally Michael van Dessel, all the way from Flanders in Belgium. He became the most famous, the most popular church musician in Ireland, not only for these many solo recitals, but also for the many beautiful pieces he wrote for his own choir. The third thing Michael and I had in common was that this green era brought us nothing but good luck. We both found a wonderful bride in this country and spent our life doing what we loved most, playing a big pipe organ. And it is with great pleasure that I declare this exhibition open.
Organist and audiovisual producer Brian McIver has Michael van Dessel to thank for introducing him to his love of the organ as an instrument.
My connection with the organ, I can trace it all back to Dundalk, and I can blame it on Michael van Dessel, because when I was 4 years of age, we used to go to Mass in Knockbridge, which is near where our house was outside Dundalk. But one day my father brought me into St. Patrick's and I heard this instrument for the first time. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was big, it was sensational in the sound that was coming forth. And I said, "My dad, what's that?" He says, "It's the organ." You know, we were at Mass at the time. And during my school days, I was a boy singer in the choir in St. Patrick's. I was a boy alto. Michael van Dessel was the organist there. And many of the time, I heard him play magnificent pieces on the organ. As a teenager, I used to go up to the gallery on Saturday afternoon where he would play music. He would ask me to turn pages for him. He would tell us about the music. He would show us what the organ could do in various ways. Now, mind you, he was actually very critical as well of bad music and bad composers. He had very, very high standards. I remember him playing at a wedding one day and they asked him to play this piece. And I was turning pages for him. As he was playing it, he was muttering between his teeth, "I wish that the guy that wrote this was roasting in some musical hell somewhere." There is, believe it or not, an arrangement of Blowing in the Wind arranged for organ by Michael van Dessel. It was a piece of music, I think, after the Second Vatican Council. Musicians like him were told to make it relevant to the people. I don't think it would have pleased him very much. And I think after the Second Vatican Council, the sort of music that he was very expert in was devalued by the church. Gregorian chant went off the radar for a while. very large choral works went off the radar for a while, and church musicians were told three chords and the truth, you know, simple folk melodies and so forth. And that was rather a shame. And I think towards the end of his life, I think Van Dassel was disappointed that church music had taken that turn, because he grew up in a very Catholic tradition, in a very proud tradition, but one where people actually produced works of the highest quality.
Michael Van Dassel was Brian McIver's introduction to the organ. He was Anne Ward's introduction to singing and being in a choir. Anne spent over 50 years singing in both the Michael Van Dassel Municipal Choir and St. Patrick's Choir, alongside both the famous Willis organ and conducted by Michael Van Dassel.
My name is Anne Ward. People might know me from the library. I was the county librarian for more years than I'd like to remember, however. But my big hobby always was singing. That brought me into very close contact with Michael Van Dassel, the late great Mr. Van Dassel. Mr. Van Dassel, I first met him in St. Vincent's School, where I was a pupil, and there would be some plays or musicals would be produced there. But he was such a lovely, charming man. If Mr. Van Dassel asked you to stand on your head, you would do it without giving it a second thought. He was just a lovely, lovely man. So that was my first contact with him. Subsequently, after I left school, two or three years after I left school, Mr. Van Dassel had decided to form what he called a municipal choir. And this choir was, he invited people from all over the town. It was non-denominational. It became quite a big choir, and we used to have concerts. I remember our first concert was for a Maytime festival. So anyway, the choir went from strength to strength for a good many years, and we would have a concert always in St. Patrick's at Christmas time, and then maybe another concert during the year. So then, as Mr. Van Dassel was getting on in years, he used to have St. Patrick's Choir, which was a very, very famous choir in its day because it was men and boys. And Mr. Van Dassel would train the young boys, and there'd be beautiful boy sopranos, and it used to be gorgeous. But then, as he got older, he was finding it more difficult to keep retraining because the boys, their voices would break and that would be it. So then he decided that he would invite ladies to join St. Patrick's Choir. So of course, because we were in the Van Dassel Choir, myself and another good number of ladies joined what we thought women would never be in St. Patrick's Choir, because it was always a purely male choir. This was a big thing now that ladies were going to be singing in St. Patrick's. So I joined that choir and remained in it for 52 years. So it was a great experience working with Mr. Van Dassel, of course, and of course the wonderful organ. And he would play these wonderful pieces, particularly after Mass. He would always have a big piece, and people would remain in the church just to listen. And the sound you could get from that organ was absolutely magnificent.
As many have testified, Michael Van Dessel's legacy lives on through the music of Dundalk and County Louth. And a number of years ago, Dundalk Institute of Technology introduced an annual award in his name, the Michael Van Dessel Choral Conducting Scholar Award. Annalisa Monticelli, herself a renowned pianist, musical director, soloist, and lecturer in Dundalk IT, explains the rationale behind the award.
So the Michael Van Dessel Award was here as when I started in 2015, and the way we select the student that is, you know, given the award is by looking at grades in all the singing and conducting classes. So for example, with the new program that we're running right now, last year they had a conducting class with myself. So I will be looking into the overall progress of the class, the skills that they developed, and also we will look into choir, how they participate and the overall grade. And myself and the other choir director, Georgina Hughes, will get together and select our best candidates and, you know, provide the award to the essentially the student that has the best skills and the higher marks.
From a mechanical point of view, the differences between an organ and a piano are varied, as explained here by Annalisa.
The piano is essentially a percussive instrument, and we have inside the mechanics of the piano hammers that will hit the strings. So inside the piano we have 3, 2, and 1 sets of strings. The low strings are thick and there's only one of them, and they're essentially handmade for the piano. And then we move into the middle of the register, we have 2 strings, and then into the higher section of the piano we have 3 really thin strings. So that's how the piano works, and when we play the notes on the piano we can make different dynamics. And we, of course, have a range pitch of 88 keys, from high to middle to low, of course. Some pianos actually is really fun. We have extra black keys both on the bottom and the top for contemporary music. And they're quite frightening for the pianist because we are so used visually to have 88 keys. And then you sit down in a new instrument and you have more keys. So the piano has 3 pedals and they're mainly for expression. We have the damper pedal, the one corda pedal in the left, and we have the tonal pedal in the middle that we hold only one note. So if we move to the organ now, it's a completely different beast. We tend to think that the organ and the piano are similar because they have keyboards, but they are really nothing alike, except for the keyboard. Okay? So here we are very lucky to have a small organ. It's only a 2 keyboards organ, and it's quite antique. I think it's from the 19th century. And it's a small enough organ, as you can see. We can have organs with thousands of pipes because the organ is made by air that is mechanically sent through the instrument to create sound. So essentially the organ is a wind instrument, as per the clarinet, the flute, etc., etc. So that's a very big difference. The one we have in Dundalk has a limited number of stops. I'm trying to count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 stops. Each stop is a different timbre. As we know, the timbre is the personality of the sound, right? While the piano has one timbre in a way and is the artistry of the pianist to make the sound soft and warm or harder through a great technique, hopefully, and good, you know, skills, finger skills. The organ, you can actually manipulate the sound. So that's what makes the organ so great for composition and experimenting with your own sound. So that's one of the, for me as a pianist, one of the greatest things of the organ, that I can manipulate the sound to make it sound as I like. And the way the organ does that is by having different pipes that are inside this instrument here and outside, can you see them there? And there are different lengths, and in some cases by different materials. So they recreate other instruments. In the organ we have the flute stops, for the flute timbre, the brass stops, etc., etc. So if we move into the other side of the organ, I will just try to show you a little bit of the stops and how they sound, okay, so that we'll hear a little bit of the organ and it's magic. So at the moment when all the stops are into the furniture, there's no sound at all. I'm playing the keyboard and nothing comes out. And then I just start playing around. So I will go with the principal and the sound that drastically changes. We have the right side in this particular instrument will be for the manual number one, that means the lower keyboard, and the second set of stops will manage the top. So we can just change the color and make it as we like. This may be your maximum in this little organ, that is plenty already. So another big difference between the piano and the organ are the pedals. You see how many we have? They're actually pitch related. So in the organ, I hope they're working. You can just, yes, do, re, mi, F, G, play them with your feet. So the organist doesn't read two systems as a pianist, they read at least three. I tend to think that organists are geniuses because the way their brain has to work in between managing feet, 2 to 7 keyboards, all the stops, it's just crazy. Often you will see that the organist needs help because they don't have enough hands.
When Michael van Dessel passed away in 1974, Una Russell succeeded him as choir director and remained in this position until 1983. On her passing in 2015, Professor Gerard Gillan, one of Ireland's most prominent organists, stated, "Ireland has lost one of its finest organists and teachers of the instrument." Here, Una Russell talks about the love that Michael van Dessel had for the Willis organ.
I won't say as one of his children, but it was certainly in that category. He allowed me practice there when I took up the organ during my college years, and that was quite a privilege.
And now back to where we began. High in the gallery of St. Patrick's with current organist and choir master Brendan McCourt. As Brendan stated earlier, after Una Russell, there were a number of organists in St. Patrick's over a short period, until he began his tenure around 35 years ago.
When I was young, I used to go to the Redemptorist, and back in that day, there was a Father Jones was in charge of the choir. And my two brothers were on the choir. And when I was only a wee fella, I thought, God, when I get old enough, I should join that choir as well. Just I always wanted to do it. And I did. And by the time I was singing and my voice broke, I remained on helping out Miss Van Dessel to play occasionally. At that point, I had been learning piano. And Miss Van Dessel was showing me the organ and how to translate piano music into organ music. It's a different approach. And he would even, in those days, write out, in his manuscript, he would write out the organ accompaniments that I would use for the whatever were the regular hymns. And I took into playing, and you know, I just got into it. So when I finished doing piano grades, as it was then, with Mae McComish here in town, I went to the Royal Irish Academy to study organ. I was appointed organist, choir master in the Redemptorist, and then I came here in 1987. I'm going to switch on the organ now. So this is key. Now, that wind you hear coming, as you enter St. Patrick's, if you look over the main doors, you'll see there's little arches with kind of louvers in the design. That's because we're taking in the air from outside, and there's a motor house built over the, as you're walking down the aisle, you'll see a wooden structure in the porch over the door. And in there is the motor. We actually have two, one with a higher pressure than another, and they're pumping the air up.
It's safe to say
like this,
that 124 years later, this famous Willis organ sounds as good today as it did back in 1900 when it was first opened.
I'm going to play a G down here on this that has an 8 written on it. Now I'm going to play the same note with this stop. Here's what I get. Okay? So I'm hearing a note that's an octave and a half away. and it's not the same note. But when I join them, but as an organist, you know not to play down there with those two stops, so you play it up here, and you get a completely new sound. And if you put that sound as a solo with your string up on the other keyboard, you have. And then if you add a little pedal. Another sound. Another sound. Sound. That's another sound.
Funded by Commission Naman with the television license fee.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.